Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to share my story. My partner Colin and I have been attending The Table for a few years now, but like Jackie mentioned, I started going to Loomis UCC when I was just 3 years old and spent most of my life growing up in that church community. I want to tell you a story about one particular night there. It was a Christmas Eve service, and it was absolutely beautiful. The lights were dimmed, candles were lit. I believe we were singing Silent Night, but something that really had a space of quiet and holiness. When out of absolutely nowhere, my little brother set off his talking Barney doll repeatedly over and over again. And if any of you were parents in the early 90s, you might recall that I Love You, You Love Me song can definitely take away from the Silent Night Christmas Eve moment. What made these scenarios much more common in my church and in my family was that my brother wasn't a toddler. My brother was in his teenage years, but he has autism and OCD and a variety of other developmental disabilities that cause him to not always understand social situations and what we often deem appropriate behavior. This meant that my family had a lot of challenges when we were growing up in our church. We were really lucky to have a very small community of faith, very similar to the one here at The Table, that was incredibly supportive of us, that knew my family, that knew my brother, but that doesn't mean people always knew how to deal with that situation, or knew how to approach, or felt comfortable working with him. When I was 18 years old, I had the opportunity to attend a really amazing conference on the East Coast called HEC, Handicapped Encountering Christ. Now, the majority of folks here were middle-aged, but I was invited to attend because of my experience with my brother. And it was an amazing opportunity where folks came together and they entered into a covenant. Every individual who attended this conference was paired together, one able-bodied person with somebody who suffered from disabilities, varying from moderate to severe. That entire weekend, you were paired together, and anyone who might be a caregiver at home was left behind. You were responsible for helping your partner with medications, with changing their diaper, with bathing them, with feeding them. And in turn, it was expected that they would also help you, that you would work together and grow from each other. During this weekend, we had the opportunity to wash each other's feet, despite the fact that some people's feet had deformities that they were often afraid to show to the world. And we also had the opportunity to share communion, drinking directly from the cup, even though some people had difficulty controlling their saliva and were often uncomfortable with this scenario. Because we had entered into a covenant of hospitality together, everyone knew that this was a safe space where they would be accepted and supported and not judged. This experience taught me so much about what hospitality could be in the church and what it could look like for people who had disabilities. But I also know that we face challenges every single day because not all of us are comfortable in that situation. This worked in this isolated space because everyone who went there had a disability and was willing to be open about it, which isn't always true, or had worked with people with disabilities for years. But what it did do was give me hope about what church can look like for people with special needs, about people coming together. In closing, I just want to share one more story about my experience here at The Table at Central UMC and about our own church congregation. Communion is a very important thing for many people of faith, and it's a core tenet of what we do. And we have done a lot of things throughout history to make sure that people are included in communion. For example, a lot of churches have switched from wine to grape juice for people who can't have alcohol. Or we always offer to bring communion to you if you can't move from your seat. But I just want to close by thinking about the fact that not all disabilities can be seen. Not all illnesses or challenges are known. About a year and a half ago, when I was going through a very difficult time, and I was misdiagnosed as gluten intolerant, I had a really big challenge in that I could no longer partake in communion. And as I shared in my kitchen table, Matt and Linda started the practice of offering gluten-free crackers here in our church so that people who had this condition were able to still participate in that activity. And while I've moved on from that scenario, there are others in our faith community here today who still take advantage of that opportunity. And it's just a sample of a small way that we can reach in hospitality towards those among us who have challenges that we may not even be able to see. So whether you've got a teenager playing Barney in the middle of church service, or you're simply offering a way to deal with communion, there are so many ways that we can reach in hospitality to those with special needs in our faith communities. And I think we all know that if Barney got played in our church community today, Matt would simply say, as the father of a two-year-old, come on, we know it's true. But the fact is, that's what makes the table so different from other church communities. Instead of shying away from the difficult questions, we encourage you to look at them deeper, to find your similarities, and to connect with people who may be facing those challenges. And for all of those reasons, I encourage everyone in this community today to continue to reach in your faith and to provide hospitality to those you may not even know need it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do no harm, shed no blood. The only law here is love. We can call the kingdom down here on earth. Beat your swords in the plows. Don't be afraid, I'll show you how. Lift your lights to the skies. All is holy. Do no harm, shed no blood. The only law here is love.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As was said earlier, my name is Steve Davidson. I teach the Old Testament in Berkeley. I was a graduate student when I first met Matt, in which case I could only suggest his grade, never give him the final one. But as you would all realize, he was a great student, and of course, he has become a great pastor, or can become an even greater one. So it's a great joy and honor for me to come here this morning. Like I said to him, that he has entrusted me with his baby, not the two-year-old, but you all. And I want to talk for a while about hosting difference. For us to think about the story of the book from the book of Ruth. When we think of the story of Ruth and Naomi, we hardly think of the differences between these two women. Ruth meets Naomi when Naomi, her husband, her two sons move to Moab as refugees from the famine in Bethlehem. Ruth and another Moabite woman, Orpah, marry these foreign men. An indication of how well the refugees had settled and integrated into society in Moab, how much their circumstances had changed, that they were now settling down in this foreign land. But tragedy walks into this happy picture, and the three men die, leaving all the women as widows. Naomi was an older widow, an older woman, and could naturally be a widow, but these two young women, Ruth and Orpah, they'll face a bleak future without a husband. And even worse, they had no sons. With no blood relative in Moab, Naomi thought the best thing to do was to return to Bethlehem with her two young daughters-in-law decided to make the trip with her. But on the walk back, Naomi realizes what it is she's taking them to. And she turns to them and says, look, no use sticking by an old, grizzled woman. I have no future that I can give you. Stay with your people. And while Orpah returns to Moab, Ruth decides to stick with Naomi. And this speech that she gives to Naomi, this commitment speech on the road to Bethlehem, reads like this. Do not press me to leave you. or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There will I be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me, and more as well, if even death parts me from you. These words thrill us because we're hearing them, the cadences of mutuality. Your people, my people. Your God, my God, as the Hebrew puts it very literally. Because for every you, there is a my. And for every you, there is an I. Clearly, Ruth and Naomi would have negotiated a sincere relationship of mutual respect, of give and take, of acknowledgement, of differences, of overcoming cultural barriers. What better picture do we want of a solid relationship than with these two women? But after we read these words, we believe that the rest of the book of Ruth gives us such a nice picture and a happy ending. Gives us a picture of what every relationship, every community of faith should be like. But if you read the book critically, it will really not let us go that far. This book troubles us because it constantly reminds the reader that Ruth is an outsider. Continually, Ruth is called the Moabite. She is never just Ruth. She is Ruth the Moabite. And the book marks her as a foreigner and as an undesirable foreigner at that. For Deuteronomy 23:3 rules out any possibility that a Moabite or their near kin, the Ammonites, will ever be accepted into God's assembly. Born from the incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters, Moabites were to be utterly rejected. Yet the book of Ruth seems to treat Ruth with such tenderness, with respect. No one said mean words to Ruth when she went to Bethlehem. No one ignored her presence. No one said to her, "You are not welcome here, go back to your homeland." No one stood at the city gate blocking its entrance. And we all know too well that inhospitality needs no signs posted over lunch counters or water fountains. Inhospitality needs no laws proclaiming exclusion. And inhospitality doesn't even need a border fence in order to say, "You are not welcome here. You are too different to belong here." Ruth the Moabite in Bethlehem is an unlikely story. This different woman, different in every way, disturbs the story and turns it from the seductions that differences can be easily overcome to reminding us how difficult it can be to host difference. In reading the book, we hardly notice that Ruth is different in any way from all of the other characters. We think she's just one of them doing a nice turn for someone that she loves. Such differences hardly emerge from the pages of the book. In fact, more of what we see shows how she integrates smoothly into the life in Bethlehem. Perhaps too smoothly. Perhaps too easily. A seduction. A conceit, a contrivance that outsiders find no difficulty becoming just like us. Becoming just like us? Why would she want to become just like us? Ruth makes her home in Bethlehem, and eventually she gets married, settles down, and she has a son. Or maybe Naomi has a son. As the text tells us, when the women gather around at the birth of this child for the naming of it, they all praised Naomi and said, "A son is born to her," perhaps ignoring Ruth and not noticing that she is there. And this son will have other sons and other sons, and one of his sons will be called David. So this undesirable foreign woman, Moabite, comes to Bethlehem, and because of her, the lineage of David is started. It's a strange story. Strange story of an outsider. Because this tale, Ruth the Moabite in Bethlehem, should never happen if anybody followed the law. Could never take place. And in fact, may not have even taken place. This could just be someone inviting us into a conversation. But this is a story of an outsider. And very often when we tell stories about outsiders, or when outsiders tell their story, it's about how they manage to fit in, with what sort of welcome they received, with the scars that they can show of how the efforts they made to get to become a part of the group opened up for them, and they became one of the inside. And all these stories about the outsider becoming one are only worth sharing once the outsider has settled down, come in on the inside, and can open up of what it used to be like when I was standing outside. The book of Ruth too easily seduces us with the idea that hospitality means that the outsider fits into the way things are done. And they adjust their difference until their difference no longer stands out. If the text constantly reminds the readers of Ruth's difference by calling attention to her nationality, it stands as a signal that at some level, Ruth continues to stand out, and rightly so. For coming to terms with difference does not require management of that difference. Rather than a liability or perhaps an odd trait, difference is actually God's gift to each person. Difference marks our individuality. Difference separates us out. Difference entrusts us with unique abilities and gifts. Difference, I argue, reflects the will of God. The idea that what God wants is for all of us to be one. And by one, many people mean the same. Think the same, walk the same, look the same, speak the same. And people will find parts of the Bible to tell you that they can show you there that one is what God wants. Because you can only be one when you are the same. The story of the Tower of Babel or the story of Pentecost in Acts 2 are always used to talk about this. In that story, I won't go too long into it, in Genesis 11, where God mixes people up by giving them different languages. You will read almost several old books commenting on that passage, and they will tell you that was God's punishment. Diversity of language, diversity of nationalities, difference is God's punishment. Or when on the day of Pentecost, people from all around the world hear one language, which of course the text doesn't say, that one language that unifies everyone, that's God's gift, because difference and diversity, no, that's contrary to God's will. The gift of diversity, the gift of different languages, the gift of different identities, the gift of multiplicity is God's gift, enabling us to have varying expressions of faith, to varying expressions of fear, varying opportunities. For to think of a monochrome God produces the expectations that this monochrome God will have monochrome people worshiping the single deity with one controlled faith, one controlled theology, one way of interpreting, one color. God of many colors, many names, many languages, many perspectives. Terence Fretheim, who teaches Old Testament at Luther Seminary, says he was miserable as a child when Crayola only had 6 colors in their crayon box. And as an adult, he rejoices over the fact that there is now a box of Crayola colors, crayons that contain 64 different colors. And he thinks to himself, that development is also a part of his faith development. As a child, I was told God only had 1 or 2 colors. But as an adult, he has come to recognize that God's colors are many and varied and multiple. Hosting difference makes us recognize that the God in whom we believe celebrates difference and accepts difference as an important aspect of the gift that God gives to people in community. Hospitality remains an important aspect, an important word in churches today, and you no doubt have been pondering it for the past few weeks. Because no church wants to be seen as inhospitable or unwelcome to others. I find it interesting as I was looking at this that the recent statistics of church growth is suggesting something else. Because if all churches want to be hospitable, it should follow that all churches should be growing. And they're not. In fact, according to statistics given to us in 2001, the denomination that recorded the highest growth of 4.3% was the Jehovah's Witnesses. Hardly a model of welcome and openness. And everyone else had single digits. The second one was the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Again, not necessarily a church given to openness and hospitality in the way we might think of it. Despite the emphasis on hospitality, churches find it difficult to grow at all or to grow beyond a certain size. And that's the big challenge, growing beyond a certain size. Many churches get stuck at around 200 to 300. Even when they are as hospitable and as friendly as they would wish to be. So David Loja, who teaches preaching at Luther Seminary in Minnesota, says, hospitality in most churches consists of this: being patient and polite to newcomers and just waiting for them to become like us or until they decide to leave. In other words, hospitality becomes managing difference. It becomes, rather than hosting it, or accepting it into a mist, hospitality becomes a technique of trying to see how can we make you like us? And how can we remind you that if you really want to be here, being like us will be the cool thing for you. And it is very, very seductive, especially when we think we are already cool, that everybody really wants to be like us. Hosting difference by welcoming that which is unusual as a gift to change us, to stretch us in new ways. The book of Ruth proves unsatisfactory to persons who have had to give up their identity. For anyone who could talk about what it was like to surrender parts of you, not because you wanted to, but because it was a silent, subtle, overt request that if you really want to be here, you should give this up. The book of Ruth is a troubling book in that regard. And so Native American scholar Laura Donaldson, when she reads this book, says, Oprah is a better model for Native American women. Given how Native American people have been asked to give up their language, give up their practices, give up their identities, give up their cultures and their way of dress and everything forcibly in order to belong to the land in which they were born. She says, Orpah is a better model than Ruth, who goes and virtually assimilates into the dominant culture. Ruth's story troubles us because either we have been the different one trying to get in, Or we belong to the community that signal in not so subtle ways, maybe you might be happier somewhere else. Ruth's story should trouble us, because when we read it, it should call us to mind to recount the ways we have asked persons to find their home in another place. Trouble us to recall the names or the faces of persons who we could have helped, or who could have helped us become better people, but their difference troubled us, scared us, or we just were never ready for that encounter with them. So thank you, Emily, for that story of your experiences of hosting difference. That quite often it's about us changing and adjusting to that which is different, rather than asking that which is different to adjust to us. Or not necessarily us changing, but us recognizing the individuality, the autonomy of that other person. Ruth's story seems to have been directed at persons who were happy to build walls to keep the different out. And there are those stories in the Bible as well. If I had all day, I will just take you through them. But we have other things to do. There are those stories. And this story of Ruth, stand against them. Stand against those voices that kept saying to others, no, here's what the law says of who should be in and who should be out. Others who were erecting walls. And this book did this unthinkable thing. In simple words, Ruth, the Moabite in Bethlehem. And it went even further. Ruth, the Moabite, the grandmother of David. It challenges those who are scared by difference and invites them to see that this woman, whom your sacred texts say should never set foot in the holy place, gives you the gift. David. To open our doors to hospitality means opening them to whoever will walk through. And your open doors may very well be the door that God has opened because other doors have been shut. The ones who come through our doors, into our lives, into our communities, into our homes, are God's gifts to us. Gifts to bring new life, gifts to lift us up, gifts to move us out of our despair, gifts to give us new possibilities, gifts that we may need at that time, gifts that we may not need at that time, gifts that we might imagine, we could never imagine that we wanted. But what a tremendous difference it makes when those unexpected gifts come through the door. And different as they are, we open our arms to embrace them. Isn't that the story of faith? The unknown stranger in need of hospitality turns out to be a pregnant woman. And that pregnant woman gives birth to a child who goes on to do great things. The lonely stranger on a long walk happens to have been the man who was on the cross a few days before. The strange-looking gardener, the Savior, unknown, unexpected, unseen, different. And we celebrate the power of the different to change us each time we gather at the table. And these elements, they are different when they're here. They're normally bigger pieces. The cups are bigger. But we come and receive that which is different here as gifts. Gifts from God, knowing that in that funny-shaped bread and that little bit of wine, God gives us gifts that we could never imagine or that we didn't even ask for.